Welcome home. We are WNST, Taos of Baltimore. Baltimore positive. We are positively. The Yankees are going to get here. I don't know if the Orioles are going to win before the Yankees get here, but the Yankees are going to get here. And on Friday, Luke and I will be down at Fadley's. I'm rubbing my tummy right now. Need some shrimp salad and some crab cakes. Even those French fries they have down there. We're going to be doing it for the Maryland Lottery, the Gold Rush Sevens Doublers. We'll have these to give away. Talked to John Martin this week about scratching things off and giving away money. We had a kind of a deep talk about gambling and gambling addiction a little bit. We're talking about that as football season's coming. So to everybody out there is words to the wise. Do these things responsibly, even in baseball season. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions are bringing me water, but I'm drinking Royal Farms coffee from a non-sponsored coffee mug right now because I broke my coal roofing mug last week, shattered all over the floor. At least I didn't cut my feet or my cat's feet. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube Multicare, keeping the car running. Luke, I'm just buying time in the TV parlance. I'm stretching because I don't really want to talk about the last couple of nights against the Cubs. I know you don't want to talk about, I mean, Wednesday had it all, even a rain delay to screw it all up. A lot of hits, no runs. Burns, no bueno, all-star break. Fellas need some time off, except that the Yankees are coming in. So, you know, rev up the jets, dude. Like, this is, it's not a five-alarm fire, but it's certainly a little a fender bender here on the way to the Yankees coming to town because you'd like for them to be playing better baseball right now.
Yeah, I mean, although the Yankees certainly have been playing awful baseball, the worst team in baseball over the last 3.5 weeks, which is just crazy to think
say
about.
Say that twice. Hold on a second. The worst team in baseball. Say that again.
At least going into what they won on Wednesday night, but going into that, they had been the worst team in baseball over, I forget what the exact date was, but it was like 3.5 over the last 3.5 weeks. And it's what I said to you during the 5-game losing streak with the Orioles was, don't let a 5-game losing streak turn into 5-15 over a three and a half week period. So, but look, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Orioles are playing their best baseball. And yeah, they did bounce back from the 5-game losing streak, but it's been choppy at best for the last three and a half weeks since that Yankees series, really. But I think you kind of said it. I think the All-Star break's coming at the right time. I think these guys are a little bit tired. It's not an excuse. I think we talked so much about June and the lack of off days, and they held up remarkably well for that, considering it was a fairly difficult schedule. But what's so weird about this, and I will bring this up more specifically pertaining to the Cubs, what's going on with the Orioles against the NL Central? They lost 2 out of 3 to Milwaukee early in the year. No shame in that. I mean, the Brewers are a good baseball team, but they were swept by St. Louis. I mean, the Cardinals are mediocre at best. They lost 2 out of 3 to Pittsburgh early in the season. I mean, the Pirates aren't terrible, but they're, what, 4 or 5 games under 500, something like that. They did sweep the Reds, but now, you know, they've at least lost 2 out of 3 to the Cubs, and they're trying to avoid a sweep there. So, you know, I didn't think Burns was bad on Wednesday night. Was it the best version of Corbin Burns, but he certainly gave them a chance to win. You know, some hard contact in that second inning. They barreled up some balls, but he settled in pretty well after that. And, you know, that last run that the Cubs added on, it's a single that goes, bounces off the second base bag that turns into a double, and then they get a run on a hit after that. So there, you said it, there was kind of everything. Some bad luck even in there, but I think for me, mostly what the big takeaway was, unlike Tuesday night where they did very little with the bats or after the first couple innings, they had ample opportunities in this game. I mean, they were, what, 0 for 11 with runners in scoring position. They left 10 on base. They had traffic on the bases just about every inning, and they couldn't get anything going. And Brandon Hyde even said it, and James McCann backed it up in the post-game clubhouse that, you know, swings probably got a little long at times. I think you get in a position where even if you're just down a couple runs, anyone, but especially a team that is known for its power, sometimes your swing's going to get a little long where you're trying to tie it up with one swing where, you know, a single or moving a runner along is the better alternative on a night where runs are at a premium. But also give Imanaga credit. He's pitched well all year and certainly pitched well against the Orioles. So, you know, we've talked about it. We talked about it during the West Coast trip. Even as they were winning games, they weren't scoring a ton of runs. So it's been one of those rare time periods where you look over the last 2 weeks where the bats haven't been on fire. And then when you couple that with not on Wednesday night, but some of the other more difficult pitching performances they've had, yeah, it's going to be choppy and you're going to be a little more up and down. But you said it, not a five alarm fire, not a three alarm fire even, or anything like that. But certainly you want to
How
try
about
to
just
salvage.
avoid the sweep fire? How about that?
I was just going to say, you want to try to salvage this last game and feel a little bit better going into this last series against the Yankees. And obviously the Yankees have been playing very poorly for a while now, but we know what they're capable of, and we know how important these three games are going to be over the weekend. I mean, Nestor, if the Orioles take two out of three from the Yankees, they've clinched the head-to-head, you know, the season series, so they have the tiebreaker. So however many games they're up or back in the AL East, it looks a little bit better than that, even knowing what a tie would mean for them. So disappointing, but you know, certainly not something that I'm sounding the alarm over, but like to see them snap out of this a little bit, try to get the last game of the series and feel a little bit better about themselves with the Yankees coming to town and wanting to finish this. I would say first half, we're well past the first half, technically speaking, but you know what I mean in terms of feeling better about themselves going into the break.
All right. We try to take on topics, baseball. I don't know what our topic is going to be. You tell me if you want to save this for Fadley's, because it's a good topic. But I think Fadley's, we have to have some sort of all-star game topic. So let's have a meeting here on the air. I don't talk much about the wall. Jim Palmer has called it the Great Wall. It's had a couple of different nicknames. Clearly Elias's wish, Angelo's spending some money on some of the fundings of the funding to get the pitching. Yeah, I guess Corbin Burns would have been here either way, but a couple of his flies would have gone a little further, as all the pitching, you know, in the ballpark over the last couple of years. Do you want to do wall at length, or are you like sort of with that where you were with Tom Brady deflating footballs?
Oh, I mean, we can do it right now. I mean, it's not a new topic. I think it's something that's magnified when you hit a couple to the wall where you say, oh, that had a chance to go out. Although,
well,
the
not
one,
just us, but when Austin Hayes is shaking his head, rounding first base, and you know he's thinking the same. You see the smile on his face saying, that would have been out. That would have been out 2 years ago, you know, like out.
Yeah, yeah. At the same time, you look at some of them and, you know, it's also saved them a ton over the last few years. I mean, I don't have any problem with it.
I think it's right sized now, correct?
I would say this. I probably brought this up to you a couple years ago, but I've talked about this with other people. I do think once they're fully into the renovations and there's a full blown plan as far as what changes are going to be made to the ballpark, I will hear maybe finding a little more of a middle ground. You know, certainly I don't want to see them ever go back to where it was, where it's 364 to the power alley. And it's listed as that. There have been theories, and I'm sure you heard whispers back in the 90s even, that it was shorter than 364 to the power alley in left center. I
think Dick Bosman had a tape. I think he went out there with yellow tape and measured it. I think Mark Williamson was looking over his shoulder when he was doing it, because it was back in 92 and 93 when I was out there. And it was like, you know, every part of the ballpark was being measured. But yes, I would agree. And Chris Hoyles thought it was like 290.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it feels like something Mike Messina, being a Stanford grad, would have investigated at some point. But I watched way too much baseball, albeit a lot of it being really bad baseball, but way too much baseball over the years where this time of year, especially this week, where we're talking about temperatures in the 90s and being so hot, what look like routine fly balls to left field that just get caught up in the air and just fly out, that doesn't happen anymore. So I have no problem with the wall. We could talk about them potentially course correcting a little bit, and maybe it's not quite as lucrative to left field, but I think the Orioles, at the very least, it's provided a break-even proposition, and I think the Orioles have actually been ahead in that when you look at their pitching at home compared to the opposition. Now, Ryan Mountcastle, Austin Hayes, if you talk to them, you know, anyone that's swinging from the right side, no, they don't like it. but at the same time, it's about winning baseball games. And, you know, I mean, that couple examples on Wednesday night, but we've also seen, you know, we've seen guys that are able to clear it no problem. So I don't think it's, at this point, it's not a topic to spend 20 minutes on, but on
well,
those
I think
nights,
the psychology of it and luring pitching and growing bats and philosophically drafting and honing left-handed hitter, just all sorts of things that if you have control of an organization, as Elias had, you could look up and say, oh, they're winning 100 games every year. Because we can say that at the end of this year if they win 100 games, right? And you can say, "What if I'm writing a book, if I'm writing Elias Ball, and I might, there's enough money in it. I'm a hell of a writer, if you haven't heard. Like, if I'm writing that book and peeling that onion back, dude, that's a thick chapter, and it's an important chapter if you pin them winning a World Series and pin them changing their thing. And I can. I was with Mike Messina drinking beer, having him talk about, and with his brother talk about, if I were a free agent, if I could pitch in any ballpark I wanted to, if I would never pitch in Colorado for any amount of money. And I could get Denny Nagel on, and he'll talk about that. So Mike Hampton and guys getting their feelings hurt going out there, right? And their ERAs hurt, and their career reputations hurt, or helped in some cases of Todd Helton and other players, right? But this ballpark had that bandbox thing. It has a thing that even Austin Hayes shakes his head, and when it happens, we joke about it. Palmer jokes about it because it has a history, and it has a currency, and it has this trajectory now with fans and a new owner and Cal Ripken and all of these things, that what it's going to be when it grows up is – pitchers might want to – it only takes one or two, dude. One or two pitchers that stick around, that pitch well here. Scott Erickson was way more valuable here back in the day because he pitched ground balls. He had a sinker. Guys beat the ball into the ground. They had a good defense. Philosophically, it's why the Kansas City Royals won in 1980 and 85, and why the St. Louis Cardinals won in the 80s with wheels and jets and AstroTurf. They played to it. So I, sure, you don't want to take this on if Fade leaves with me, because I got things I could say about this, Luke.
I don't know. I mean, I just feel it's an old topic at this point. And look, Austin Hayes can shake his head, and you know me, I'm not anti Austin Hayes about him as a player, even compared to a lot of people this year. I mean, he's actually played pretty well since he's come back from the IL. But we also have something called StatCast at this point in time, and the Austin Hayes flyout, according to StatCast, would only be a home run in 2 of 30 major league ballparks. So, okay. Now, the old Camden Yards, would it have been 3 of 30? I agree, yes. But this wasn't there are plenty of examples. There have been plenty of examples where you'll hit a fly ball to the wall at a certain part of the wall in left field, and it's literally – the only park in baseball where it's not a home run.
Dude,
so
anybody
those
could
examples,
say, if I were in Fenway, that's a double off the wall on lots of routine fly balls to left field.
And I'm really glad you brought up Scott Erickson just as an example, because that was perfect. He was perfect for Camden Yards, yet those were the days of the old carpet AstroTurf. Scott Erickson wasn't so good. That's why he wanted to get out of Minnesota, because that sinker ball did not play well playing on carpet, where it was just so fast and would get through the infield over and over.
Singles
so,
become doubles.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
become triples.
Look, I mean, we could do this all day. I mean, you can go through better than I could, because, you know, you've watched baseball longer than I have. The number of right-handed hitters that went to Fenway and became too pool happy that, okay, they'd hit some home runs over the monster, but it was to their detriment as far as their overall offensive profile. So, you know, we could do this all day.
You want me to start with Rick Burleson, Juan Beniquez? Where do you want me to go? I can go through that forever.
I think
Butch Hobson,
of,
you know,
was the, I'm thinking of the Kansas City catcher that actually killed the Orioles. Mike McFarland. He played a year there in Boston. I think it was only a year in Boston. I think so. Unless I'm thinking of someone entirely.
Just as a dude who played wiffle ball and loved Little League and played baseball and liked batting cages, Anytime I would walk on the field at Fenway Park, and I did it 100 times as a media member, including the 99 All-Star game, the first thing you want to do is get in the cage and try to hit the wall. I mean, and if I were left-handed, I probably would be tapping at it for fun, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it's such a weird, different park, right? And I think Camden Yards is more normalized now, but I think the left field wall and the hook of that and seeing balls go foul, fair, or whatever, and just high enough, and it's going to play to Gunnar Henderson's career to stay here. That he won't want to go to a place where left field or right field's a problem, you know?
Well, and on the flip side of this, now, the home run ball is a different equation for left field, but we also see way more triples now in left field, which the old Camden Yards, you never saw that. So keep in mind, when you do have a bigger left field, you do have a bigger outfield, there's also the element of you better have a left fielder who can cover ground. And that's where I think it's been interesting to bring it back to the Orioles right now. You know, we've seen Heston Kerstad play some left field out there. And to this point now, very small sample size, but we've seen him handle himself okay out there. And I think that's a big key for someone like him moving forward, even though Heston Kerstad probably profiles as a right fielder and you would cover a little less ground in right field at Camden Yards. But, you know, depending on, you know, it's the same thing with, you know, we using Fenway Park as the example. Yeah, in left field, you don't need to cover much ground. Right field, you need to cover a lot of ground at Fenway. So I like it. It's made for
and
a
you have
more
to have
interesting...
an arm in right field like Dewey Evans, and you'll be compared to him forever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you always need to be able to throw from right field. But I mean, it's added some new elements to the game that weren't there pre, 2022 when they introduced the big wall. There definitely, absolutely is a mental element to it. And I think that's where someone like Jordan Westberg really thrives in the sense that, okay, Jordan Westberg's game isn't that he's going to be a 40 home run guy, but
his game is he's going to hit 50 doubles, dude.
I was just going to say,
he's an unbelievable gap hitter.
Yeah, I mean, he cleared the wall. You know, he can clear the wall, no problem. But he's going to be a guy that is probably going to hit 25 to 30 home runs and hit a bunch of doubles.
I see Molitor in him lately.
Yeah.
Like that DiMaggio Molitor right bang. You know what I mean? Like the way he comes through the zone. Yeah. He's becoming one of my favorites quickly.
We touched on it the other day with him getting the All-Star nod, but I mean, the thing about him that I just like is, don't get me wrong, he's physically gifted, but he's not physically gifted in the way that Gunnar Henderson, who's just a monster and does everything well. You know, I feel like Westberg is able to maximize his athletic gifts that he does have, but you look at him from a StatCast standpoint, like he doesn't have extraordinary bat speed, but he uses really, really well. And he's hit for power. He's hit for a decent enough average. But the only thing he doesn't do is he doesn't walk a whole lot, which I wouldn't put it past him that won't be something that he'll continue to add as he gets older, because I just think he's another one of those guys.
Well, he hits strikes,
been talking
dude.
About that
it's not Yogi Berra. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh,
they're throwing
yeah.
him strikes, and he's hitting strikes in all quadrants of the zone, really. I mean, you know, he is a guy that, If they were playing, and he grew up in the game of we're going to play everybody on one side of the field and dare you to hit the ball the other way. I mean, I've not seen him bunt, maybe, whatever. But, I mean, it feels to me like those are the kind of tools that he's had since he was 9 years old, learning how to do things like that, old school stuff.
Yeah, no question about it. And, I mean, he was the one guy. He doubled off the wall on Wednesday night. That was the one. 29 out of 30 ballparks, that's a home run, obviously. But – look, and that's what you need. You need to have the proper mentality. And I think I've talked about this with you before. I mean, the Orioles, from the time that Mike Elias and Sig Meidel and this current baseball operations staff, these current coaches, you think about what the old school mentality was as far as hitting, you know, pure hitting. It was always what? Hit a line drive up the middle, right? And I'm not saying that there isn't a place for that. But we also know that even though the shift isn't as pronounced as it used to be, you can still position your second baseman or shortstop almost right to the bag, and that ball up the middle gets caught way more than it used to. Their mentality is hit the ball off the left center field fence. If you're left, or if you're a right-handed hitter, if you're a left-handed hitter, the mentality is you want to hit the ball off the right center field fence, you know, hit to the gaps. I mean, that's really what their mentality is. And look, in this current, it's funny we're talking about this because in this current stretch, they have struggled to score some runs and they have struggled, but the body of work speaks for itself. They came into Wednesday night's game leading the league in runs scored per game. We know that they've slugged. We know they've hit for power, home runs, doubles, triples, because they have guys who can run. So I will still take that mentality over the long haul. And I know people will say, well, are you going to be able to do that in October? Go look at how many home runs the Texas Rangers hit last October. I mean, it's we keep trying to size up this team for October, and we all have priors. We all have ideas of what we think wins in October baseball. And look, yeah, they need another starting pitcher. And yeah, they need to add some bullpen. I've talked about that since spring training, that I want to see them add bullpen arms. But ultimately, if this team's going to make a deep run, they're going to need their star hitters to hit like star hitters and perform. And, you know, that it's going to be a matter of how are they swinging the bats come October. That's why get to the All-Star break for the guys that aren't going to Arlington for the All-Star game. Get off your feet and get away from the game for a few days to get a mental break, physical break, all of that. But you've said it since day one, as we were talking about the pitching, even going into opening day, you said it, they're going to hit the baseball. And I get it. Runners in scoring position recently, it hasn't been as good. And yeah, they've been taking some big swings and they've been trying to do too much at times, but James McCann said it. And I happen to agree with him in this instance. This is part of this is the ebbs and flow of a season. And you're going to go through some stretches where you're not going to swing it very well. We've seen them go through some stretches where they're not going to pitch very well, especially when they've lost two or three starting pitchers over the last 6-7 weeks. It's just reality. It's not an excuse. They certainly need to address it. And but in the meantime, still in first place, still in a excellent position, right around, you know, on a pace that's right around 100 wins, you know, second straight year to your point. So, yeah, not a 5-alarm fire, not a 4-alarm fire, or even a 3-alarm, but you don't want to get swept and you want to feel a little bit better about themselves with the Yankees coming to town. And if for no other reason, forget about the standings for a second, forget about the tiebreaker and the head to head. You don't want to give the Yankees any reason to feel good about themselves going into the break, because like I said, they've been awful for close to a month now. You don't want to give them a chance to reel off, you know, win 2 out of 3 or sweep or anything like that, where not only have they closed the gap in the division, but they're feeling way better about themselves, because of late, the Yankees, it's been Aaron Judge, Juan Soto is who he is, and the rest of that lineup isn't scoring runs, and their pitching has gone to a bad place. Even their rotation that looks so much better on paper than the Orioles rotation has been really bad the last few weeks. So you want to leave the Yankees continuing to feel that way going into the All-Star break.
You know, having Rick Tellender on this week and having Randy Merkin on with me this week, and I would encourage everybody to go out to Baltimore Positive, even after the Cubs leave town or during the All-Star break, and listen to some wisdom. Randy Merkin has worked in sports radio for 30 years. He ran ESPN 1000 for a period of time in Chicago, but he was one of our executive producers at Sporting News Radio. Chicago lifer. Sat in meetings with Mark Jenskow, Terry Brennan. We talked about all the backstage drama at 101 Sports. And it was meeting after meeting after meeting about shows, about budgets, all the boring stuff that 105.7 puts out on their Twitter feed with their little quadrants of notebook paper. And Kenny Albert taught me all this 35 years ago. I had him on 2 weeks ago. And then Tellender worked at the paper as a columnist. And Jack Gibbons, whom I've mentioned here as a saint, literally a saint, Jack Gibbons, who is responsible for all of this and making me what I am and bosses. Dude, I don't have a whole lot of budget meetings with you, but I want to have a budget meeting because you're going away for the week. And we have this All-Star game and we have the Gunnar Henderson gun show and all of that. Before we go, here's what I want to do for our Fadley's. This is our budget meeting for our Fadley segment. I want to know what you think as columnist Luke about the trading deadline, targets, and the most important thing, because you've alluded to this more than anybody, you've talked a lot about this, who's going to get tapped on the shoulder and be exited off of the pile diver group as Buck Showalter's showing up on all the competitors' podcasts and places in Baltimore, which I find to be fun. I want to hear what you think is going to happen over the next 3 weeks in projecting this, because it started already. Kerstadt or Kowser? Mountcastle or Mayo? Not Holiday, can't be him. Well, can't be Mayo, can't be him. Well, Norby, he's expendable. But does anybody want him? Where are we on Povich? How do we really feel about our pitching? Where are we with depth? How do we feel about the catcher who's hitting the cover off the ball? There'll be no spot for him here. How do other people feel about these prospects? I think that's our segment on Friday. What do you think, Luke? Can you give me 18-inch column on that for the Sunday for the Bulldog?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's still a lot of conjecture. I think one interesting element we haven't mentioned at all with that, and you know, I won't belabor this point, but you also have the draft that's this weekend. And this week that coincides with the All-Star game, and we're less than 3 weeks away from the trade deadline. I also think not that Mike Elias is solely focused on the draft. Let's be clear. I mean, all these general managers have lieutenants and people in the organization that, you know, you can multitask. We all understand that, but it is, you know, and I've even seen like the John Haymans and the Ken Rosenthals of the world allude to this as well. It is something that teams do care about the draft, and teams do put in a lot of work with the draft, and general managers care about the draft as well, that the timing of it is really strange when you think about that, where you have the trade deadline and the draft being so close together. I think that's where some executives probably would like to maybe see the draft move back to June, or maybe be moved to a different time. I don't know. But
hey, football is going to break everything and change the whole calendar at some point, I think.
Yeah. But it is pretty interesting, though, when you think about it, and especially in an organization like the Orioles, who, as I've told you, Mike Elias, and I saw someone brought up one of his quotes from last year right around this time, where he said, look, yeah, we were excited about this year's team, and we want to augment this year's team, and we feel like we have a great chance to win a World Series, but I'm not doing my job if I'm not maintaining long-term health for the organization as well. What better way have the Orioles done that than to draft the way that they've drafted? I mean, they're going to send three guys to the All-Star game in Arlington that they drafted. And yes, Adley Rutschman, everyone, you know, except maybe a few other teams might have taken Bobby Witt. But Adley Rutschman was a very close to being a strong consensus 1-1 at that point in time 5 years ago. But Gunnar Henderson and Jordan Westberg were not top 5 or top 10 or even top 20 picks, and they're both going to the All-Star game. So if you're Mike Elias, you're still spending time on the draft, even though you're not picking first or second or fifth. That's still something. So,
in the old music business, when I was a music critic, you talk to these nerds, and sometimes you see it by, we develop our talent. We develop our artists. You know what I mean? And guys like Prince would be like, I'm producing my own stuff, or I'm not signing with your record label. And then there's other people that they draft that are 1-1s and look like they're ready to come, and they don't make it in other places. And here they make it. College players, All-Star game this week, Adley Rutschman, all of that. But to your point, developing talent is something we could never talk about. That really was the core of the Oriole way. It's the core of everything that built the organization right on up to like 82 or 83, when Earl Weaver and like Gal Ripken, like right around there, it stopped. And for 40 years, they didn't develop anything. And I hear Cythra, well, you know, I discovered Barry Bonds. I'm thinking, wow. But there was a point where developing that talent, whatever that raw talent is, or whatever came in the clear and the rub and the creams later on for him. But just in a general sense, to your point, not everybody takes sandwich picks and makes them Hall of Famers, right?
Yeah. So, and look, that's not an excuse for Mike Elias or anybody. Like, their trades have still been made, and we'll see some trades made, whether it's the Orioles or other teams even as the next few days, as we're talking about this final series before the All-Star break. But once the draft is out of the way, then it's full systems go. All these teams, what are they doing? Are you buying? Are you selling? Are you buying and selling? Are you one of those teams that is going to continue to try to take this down, and you're going to try to evaluate the next couple of weeks. I mean, we've brought up the Texas Rangers as potential sellers, and then they've reeled off a winning streak, and now there's talk about them staying in the race. But if they lose 8 of their next 10, they're probably sellers again, given where they are and with some of the contracts that they have. So it really, you know, it sounds like a cop-out, and, you know, I'm not just going to make a bold prediction just for the sake of doing it, but so many of these teams still don't know who they are right now. And look, I don't think you should necessarily judge the next couple weeks of baseball any more than what's happened over the first three and a half months now. But you do have so many of these teams with the three wild cards, and now having ample examples, most recently the Arizona Diamondbacks, who were mediocre all last year until the very end of the season. They get in as a wild card, and then before you know it, they're playing in the World Series. So you have teams that are looking at that, but you also have teams that say, you know what, we've got a chance to be the third wild card mathematically, but we don't really think we're built to make a deep October run. And that's kind of where the Orioles were a couple years ago, right? When they traded Mancini and Jorge Lopez. I mean, it was a nice story that they were better. But I think 2 years later, it was the right decision. And we've seen them already have players that make an impact that they've acquired then. So there's just so much of that going on right now. And the draft is just another variable that doesn't complicate things, because they're, you know, they're separate entities. I mean, they're separate objectives, but it's still sweat equity that general managers are exhausting right now to try to have a good draft. And Michael Elias, even though the Orioles are picking way late compared to where they were a couple years ago, they still want to nail their picks. They still want to see if they can find the next Jordan Westberg.
Right.
Sure. I mean, they've drafted guys, you know, the last second, third round. I mean, guys that have made it to the majors and everything. So not everyone's going to be a Hall of Famer, or not everyone's going to be an all-star, but you want to continue to draft. And especially now, as we're talking about potentially dealing prospects, you want to replenish that system. You want to have a pipeline. You don't want to be in a position where that system gets cleaned out in the next year or two, and then suddenly then you're looking at a window closing at some point down the line. So the whole idea is to have that churn. You know, to have that churn. Hopefully not a churn as extreme as Tampa Bay, as I said, and that's where ownership and payroll will come in terms of hopefully keeping some of your young talent. But at the same time, we also know, Ravens being a perfect example, the draft, if you do it well, can be the lifeblood of any organization in any sport. But certainly the Orioles have made their hay with the draft, and they want to try to do that. But after that, yeah, make some trades, add some pitching. And they certainly need to fortify both the rotation and the bullpen.
Luke Jones can be found at Baltimore Luke out on the internet. Just not next week during the All-Star game. He'll be found. He'll be the guy getting fat on pizza on the beach and playing the role of Uncle Luke and St. Luke and Deacon Jones and all the other roles that he plays next week. He'll be watching the Yankees and the Orioles this weekend. We'll be watching the Orioles and the Yankees together on Friday down at Fadley's as I bring my great trade debate to you. Leonard Raskin's coming down on Friday. I'm trying to get some of the beat writers that cover the Yankees, Pete Caldera specifically. I'm trying to get him to come over and sing some show tunes with me over at Fadley's. I'm trying to bribe him with a crab cake. I mean, guys from Jersey, it should be easy to bribe the guy with a crab cake. I'm bribing with Maryland Lottery tickets as well. Gold Rush Sevens doublers. I'm giving these away to everybody, even the Yankees fans that are down at Fadley's on Friday. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water crystal clear, as well as Jiffy Lube Multi Care. It's a beautiful summer. I got my El Guapo shirt on. I feel like I give so much love to State Fair. We do the show there a lot. We do the show at Beaumont several times, and I eat at Beaumont all the time, and I love it. But El Guapo is the Mexican sort of Latin. It's not just Mexican. It's Latin. It's got all sorts of stuff. Tequila. A lot of tequila. Really good food. Delicious brunch. And I never, like, wear the shirt. Maybe because it's green. I don't know. But either way, got to get back over to El Guapo. I had some of the best shows I've ever done at El Guapo. Jane Miller and I sat there and discussed the city for a couple of hours. Rob Roblin, who to me is a legend. I got this. I had like a legitimate Herradura Silver in the margarita, a margarita on the air with salted rim with Rob Roblin. Hell, I felt like I was at the Preakness. So good stuff going on around here. Great guests from Chicago this week, trying to get some New York people on. I think we're going to have some greatest hits on Monday and Tuesday. So if you tune in, you hear Brooks Robinson saying howdy, or you hear Cal Ripken being all serious about the Hall of Fame, or hear Tony Gwynn, he's not alive, but he comes back to life sometimes around here. And certainly his thoughts and his spirit and his voice and his chuckle and his belly laugh. So I'll try to bring all that to life next week while Luke's on vacation, getting fat on Max Pizza down in Wildwood, while the rest of us are back here working hard and sweating it out, waiting for the rock and roll. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Beat the Yankees, for crying out loud, and BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us.